July 30th, 2019 session of TeamSpeak for Tangerine SDR. My name is Dave, KV0S, and this week I've been working a bit on listening to devices that are actually serial port channels and how to connect them and talk to them with web servers or web servers and browsers. I had a bunch of this code in the past and I'm resurrecting it, learning about what's different and new. And so it's a bit of a learning process, but I'm making. So next on the list, we have Dave, KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello, all. I've been programming mostly and diddling about and not entirely sure where my time's been going, but haven't accomplished as much as I intended, but still done some interesting things. Mostly doing JavaScript coding lately, but that's about it for now.
Well, fine business, Dave. And next on the list, we have Mike, AAAK, shown as recording and Mike muted. And we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak session TeamSpeak Archive. tangerinesdr.com. So next on the list, we got all these people. Okay. Next on the list, we have somebody's got an echo. Next on the list, we have Nathan into W2NAF. Go ahead, Nathan.
Thanks a lot. Nice to be here this evening. Things are moving right along. The big thing for me this week is I'm moving to Scranton. And so the actual move is going to be next Monday. So we're starting to do pack boxes and we're going to do a walkthrough of the new house next week. And just moving along there. And I'm also working on submitting some abstracts for the fall AGU meeting. And I'm also starting to think about the Tapper DCC. Back to you.
Resume. Next on the list, we have Rick. W2GPS. Go ahead, Rick.
I think it's working. I swapped out the motherboard computer I'm using here yesterday, and there's still some odd side effects to having done that, but I think this is still I have not done anything exciting this week except the ongoing flood of documentation and have some side count to try to get up to speed. Things are at. Very much looking forward to getting the specs to the point where I start doing some experiments, at least in the area that I'm looking at, so listening slowly to see what's next.
Fine business, Rick. Next on the list, we have Tom in 5EG. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening, Dave. Good evening to everybody on the list. Hopefully this is, I just up Windows 1903 on this first time was a blue. Instead, tonight I went a blue screen of death procedure. So it seemed to take at force reason. I've modified the specific for the magnetometer modules to run off +5 and also per Nathaniel's request to add a use case for direct breakout the Odroid to the module to the local extender. And I computed the power draw. It looks like it's going to average around 20 or 25 milliamps, most termination resistor. Very little bit of it is actually ICs. The maximum could possibly be around 70 or so. Maximum power is going to be or so. Shouldn't be too much to supply. And that's about it for this week.
Well, fine business, Tom. And thanks for posting all these documents you've been creating. Next on the list, we have Scotty, WA2DFI. Go ahead, Scotty.
Oh, good evening, everyone, and thanks again, Dave, for running this. I know it's kind of a drudge job, but we really appreciate it. And thanks also to Mike for recording. This week, I haven't done really a lot. I had a little dialogue with Tom today. It seems like the time I get to work on this is the Monday before our meeting here. So not a whole lot of progress, but I'm trying to kind of organize all of the documents that Rick is wading through to trying to get some standard names, some standard presentation and logos and things like that. And we're talking about logo usage. So after we get in the main session, I think maybe Tom and Nathaniel and I can have a quick discussion on that and talk about how we're going to brand things as far as what's Tangerine SDR and what's HamSci and or what's Personal Space Weather Station. So just trying to get things organized. It looks like we've got a great start on lots of documentation. Amazing what we've come up with so far. So looking forward to tweaking on things and fleshing things out. So like Rick says, we can get started. Back over to you, Dave.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Bill AB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Thanks, Dave. Good evening to the net. I've been quite busy this past week. Worked on an update of budget impact for the National Science Foundation with Nathaniel to figure out on what to submit to them on that, and we got that taken care of. Been working quite a bit with the SatNOG's central control code, become familiar with how it works. The objective at the base code, and I'm working doing some modifications to it to just experiment with enough to see how it works. The objective there is that it'll give me a good chance to become familiar enough to do the detailed design part of the central control system. So I've got it working working quite a bit on email verification and token issue and stuff like that. And I burned most of the day today trying to get the email working. And later on, I found out that, oh, well, it was because there's a combination of multiple problems where there's only a few email providers that will accept SMTP direct submissions of mail. So I've got to make sure that I have a good provider for that, and so go further on that. Also, in playing with the simulation of some of our stuff using the Odroid M2 N2, working with the Red Pataya, I'm able to output a file and look at it HDF, which is created using digital RF. And I can see a waveform that Nathaniel and I talked about this quite a bit. And this waveform I'm getting represents the difference between my GPS DO signal generator and the Red Pataya's clock frequency. And Phil suggested that I do a phase coherence check on this to take a look at what is the impact of the occasional missed data. And so, when we get into the roundtable discussion, I'm going to be looking for some advice on exactly how to do that. I only have some intuitive ideas on how to do it, but I guess I'm looking for what is the right way to do that. So we can come back to that. Back to you, Dave.
Fine business, Bill. And next on the list, we have Stephen, AD0AE, and he's mic muted, so we'll
go ahead, Stephen.
All right. Hi, everybody. Hopefully you all can hear me. I'm Steve Kepler, AD0AE. I'm a assistant professor at Clemson, for those of you that don't know me. And I haven't been on a net in a really, really long time, actually. So I'm not exactly sure what to say. I like Nathaniel, I'm not moving, but we're having a new HIVAC put in tomorrow. And I need to get AGU abstracts done in the usual insanity of being a professor with summer dwindling away. So that's pretty much my life these days. My son was having a little bit of difficulty going down, but I made it back to the office to call in. I'll probably be trying to take some notes tonight, and I'm looking forward to hearing the discussion. So, and I also will say, too, that I'll probably be out of here pretty sharply at about 10 o'clock. So just because I should get home at some point. So anyways, all right. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephen. And please come back, and we can work on getting your push-to-talk button working so that you don't have to mute. Next on the list is Dan, N4XWE. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Well, I was busy this week. I didn't really do a lot. I did update the software on my Odroid N2, and I did have a chance to read all the updates to the documentation on the website. So that was kind of my work for the week. And I guess that's about it. Back to you, Dave.
Well, that's the list. So we've introduced everybody. So we're open for general discussion.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Yes. Magnetometer. I'm not an expert in that area. I've never experienced a magnetometer that is not interfered with by local things. But in the course of my commercialness, handed a GPS receiver that I've never seen before, but it's really cool because all the parts on the board look very familiar to me. Xilinx zinc processor, a bunch of other parts, and it happens to have on the GPS a magnetometer as well as an electrical management unit, both mounted on the GPS module. And I'm sort of wondering, is that a useful thing to have a magnetometer in the GPS receiver board when I can't imagine the GPS receiver board residing anywhere that would not be affected by its surroundings? But if there's an expert out there in magnetometers, I'd like to be educated.
I can say something to that. So with the magnetometers that you probably see there, they're probably a very coarse resolution, maybe hundreds of nanotesla resolution, and they might be good for getting the basic orientation of the Earth's local field. But the type of magnetometer that we're looking at putting into this project needs to be much more sensitive. You know, we're going to be having it go down to, say, 13 nanotesla, I think, is the best resolution we can get out of this particular one. And it's going to be some of those smaller fluctuations that we're going to be very interested in from a space science perspective. So in a lot of projects and cell phones, all your cell phones have magnetometers in them. A lot of satellites have magnetometers. A lot of things have magnetometers, but they may be engineering grade, or they may not be sufficient for conducting space science type of studies.
Well, that makes sense. Not know what this means. And field resolution is 0.3 microtesla, so I guess you're right.
Yeah. You know, one of my friends, Lou Lanzarotti, he just sent out a paper this week. It's a bit of a history paper, but it talks about the Russian School of Geomagnetic Pulsation and some of the earlier work done looking at these magnetic pulsations from a space science perspective. And it points out that a lot of the information wasn't known prior to this paper or prior to this person, Valerie Troitskaya's life, because the magnetometers at the time just didn't have the resolution. And so people, you know, didn't see these things. But when they started developing magnetometers that had this fine scale resolution, all of a sudden they saw these either what are called PC pulse continuous oscillations or impulsive PI oscillations in the magnetic field that just weren't visible. They would not be visible on a magnetometer with a 300 nanotesla resolution.
Ah, okay, that makes sense. The best magnet I have here in my lab is my HP 5065A rubidium standard. I've learned not to rotate it at all.
Very good.
So, Nathaniel, would it be true that something with that kind of resolution, that 300 nanotesla resolution, that might very well work indoors or in places that the more sensitive ones would be swamped out?
That's possibly true, but you'd probably be able to tell things like which way is north and, you know, which way is south and east and west. And you could probably still pick up local interference, but I'm not sure how much information you'd get from space. People have used some cell phone magnetometers before to do some space science studies, but they could only see really big events. There's something called a substorm, which is a particular type of auroral enhancement. And if you have a really big substorm, you can see that on the cell phone, but you have to have a really big event. Otherwise, you need something more sensitive.
Okay, that makes sense. And I believe, Tom, you said ours was, our resolution is like 13 nanoteslas. Is that how sensitive it is?
Well, I think that's what Nathaniel said. I'd have to look up the spec again. It's got a bunch of money samples.
Phone activated.
I had a question. What kind of magnetometer is it? Is it a flux gate or is it something on a chip or?
Yeah, it's called a I'm getting some echo.
Go ahead, Tom.
Okay. It's a magneto-inductive device. Is a low-frequency oscillator, and it looks for chain inductance of three different coils, which are mutually orthogonal. So you have an X, a Y, and a Z, and each one's fed with an oscillator. And as you change the magnetic field, the inductive chain that causes the oscillatoristics. And so the chip that measures an average over a number of measurements.
So it doesn't do DC, it just sort of does like low frequency AC measurements.
Yeah, right. It's in the several hundred kilohertz range.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, it's something I haven't seen before, Steve. Hillman found it. If you go on the tangerinestr.com website and look at the magnetometer document that Tom put together, there's a link to the specification sheets, and the PNI company explains the technology. It's really pretty interesting.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. So is Hillman going to look primarily for... So I'm going into a little bit of science. Is Hillman going to look for like ULF waves or sort of the usual stuff he kind of looks for?
Yeah, ULF waves. That's going to be a main thing. And of course, substorm activity and geomagnetic disturbances.
Okay.
See, Steve, can you put your TeamSpeak on push to talk?
All right, so how do I do that? I downloaded this about 5 minutes before I got on here, so...
Okay, well, maybe Dave or Dan is an expert on that, can help you. I think it's on the tool menu, right, Dave? Tools, options, and then under the capture.
I found that the right shift button makes a good push-to-talk button for a Windows machine, Steve. I know you're using a Mac, probably.
Yeah, I'm using a Mac right now. So I'm used to doing telecon mode. Generally tend to mute and then only unmute when I'm planning to talk. That's why I'm sort of doing that, unless it's driving everybody nuts. And I apologize.
Yeah, it's really hard to understand.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's under tools, caption, tools, permissions, capture.
Tools, option, capture, and then there's a push to talk button, and then you can pick which key on your keyboard you want to use as push to talk.
I put a copy of the Russian School of Geomagnetic Pulsations paper up on my Google Drive. I sent out a link to that for anyone who's interested. This paper basically talks about the studies of one particular scientist, Valery Tritskaya.
I'm very interested because I've kind of felt in a vacuum knowing what it was we were trying to measure. You have specifications, but without a general sense of what the experimental quantities are that are trying to be observed, it's good to have some background in say that.
Yeah, I think this paper does a pretty nice job of highlighting and explaining some very important features that we might be looking for.
And that link is, it's down there on the bottom. I see it. Thanks.
No problem.
Yeah, so Tom, this week I want to work a little bit on the top level requirements document. Maybe I can send that to you and review and try to get it out to you more than a few hours before the meeting, so that we can do a back and forth a few times on it.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, I've looked through what you sent since we were busy discussing. I'll look at that as apologize for the rest of you.
Oh, no problem. I apologize for sending it so late. It should have been done a lot earlier, so you'd have more time.
Yeah, very good. This computer at least is on 19 now, so it was a chore to get it back to Windows before a TeamSpeak session.
Isn't 1903 like about 100 years too early?
Yeah. There you go. No wonder. It's looking for a 100-year-old computer.
So it must have a negative timestamp because time starts in 1980, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a Windows machine, so it's not Linux, so I guess it can base. So
I presume that's like a Windows 10 and the build is 1903, right?
Yeah. That's supposed to mean 2019 and in March. And the last time I was machine, they got a working version of the installer for my machine about October from the March edition. This time, how many months are we after March? But this, I have one computer that seems to be a child. This one, blue screen.
So are they going to try to do regular updates like Ubuntu and label them with dates?
Yeah, they were on a 1903 and 1909 cadence every 6 months, but they just changed that. I think they're struggling with the twice a year. There was some press, what Intel would call a tick-tock, where one once a year is a major release and opposite release in the...
So like long-term and short-term or long-term and leading edge or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, I think maybe big and small. At any rate, this one, miraculously, I've had to learn how to force the power down 3 times in a row to catch Windows attention.
Oh, I hate that when it just hangs and it says shutting down and it just sits there and spins.
Yeah, it turns out on Windows, if use the power button down for 8 seconds, it'll power off. And if you force it off and then turn it on and then force it off. If you do that three times in a row, Windows will suddenly recognize you're in some kind of a difficult rollback.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, at any rate, so this one, I was doing that the third time, and the second time. And after the first forced rollback, it said it was rolling back, and I just let it. The forced rollback was to, in fact, complete the update crashing. So completed successfully, reason to understand.
It's Windows. You don't need to know why.
Yeah, there was a funny conference, a statement. This is like probably 8 or 10 years ago when someone asked Linux developers if they were going to put a blue screen of death in Linux to match Windows feature for feature. They complained about how difficult it would be to add that. At any rate, should we discuss the logos and markings on the...
Yeah, I think maybe since Nathaniel's here, and I mean, I can represent Tapper. I mean, if you want Steve to chime in, we can get him to write something, but maybe that's we could do it here.
Yeah, I just that like is- it. Everybody on the same sheet of paper.
I think it's a good idea to talk about that because as I've been working on something for the central host, the central control system, I realize we probably want a name for the network itself, something like Space Weather Network or something like that to distinguish the overall distributed array of small instruments from the Tangerine device.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was at because there seems to be a proliferation of documents and you know, they have Tangerine on them and they have Tapper on them and they have Hamsai on them. And it's really not clear as to, you know, what's what. And I was trying to really avoid some of the problems we had with the HPSDR project in keeping the lines delimited. So I'm trying to keep the Tangerine stuff on the Tapper side with Tangerine logo and Tapper logo and keep the Space Weather Station stuff on the Hamsai side. And because we really have two types of documents, we have the Tangerine documents, which describe the general purpose hardware and perhaps the protocols and requirements and things like that. And then we have the personal space weather stations, which are much more specific, which say, okay, now we take a Tangerine board and we make it do this, and that becomes a personal space weather station. So I'm trying to draw the line kind of down the middle and keep the Tangerine stuff on one side and the Hamsai stuff on the other. But as Tom and I were discussing, I don't want to throw out all the Hamsai logos off one side and throw out all the Tangerine logos on the other. I just want to avoid future confusion and make sure we have a common set of file names that so you can look at the file name and identify exactly what document and identify whether it's a Tangerine spec or it's a personal space weather station spec.
And then there's also the Space Weather Network spec, which has to do with the overall total collection of devices and central controller. I'm thinking, you know, SWX network or something like that would be distinct from Tangerine, and it would be a unique name.
Right. I mean, to my mind, that is a Space Weather Station document because that's something unique to the Space Weather Station that the Tangerine hardware would be usable for, but it's not really... I mean, it's something implemented on the Tangerine hardware, if I'm understanding you right.
Right, yeah. The Tangerine is a component of the SWX network.
Right. And then the protocol used by the SWS network would be unique to that network.
Yeah, so So let's throw out a couple of hypotheticals here. The magnetometer modules, how it goes?
Oh, you would pick that one.
Okay, because I don't think that's Tangerine because I think that's only used on the Space Weather Station, but it's a hardware module, so that's...
Well, we're going to have to address this sooner or later because the whole idea of making this whole thing open source is that other people are going to come in and say, oh, I want an XYZ module to plug into the hardware, and that's not going to be Tangerine or Personal Space Weather Station. So perhaps you're right, it should be a Personal Space Weather Station spec because that's really what its use case is for.
Yeah, right. So I can see like on the receiver module and the data engine, you know, those are Tangerine. The clock module could go either way.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that the RF module, the clock module, the data engine, and perhaps some shields if they're specifically made for, by Tapper in this first round would all be Tangerine. And then the additional stuff, I mean, it might be, okay, let's look at it this way. So compare it to the Arduino. So the Arduino is the baseboard, right? Are all the shields called Arduino shields, or are they called other things?
Most of them are called Arduino shields.
But they would be called an Arduino something, and the something would be what it's designed to do, like an Arduino magnetometer or an Arduino parallel IO or something like that.
Yeah. On the magnetometer, of course, you know, we can plug it into the Odroid without ever going through the data engine. Yeah, I guess that's
right. And it uses a standard interface, the standard I2C. So I think, I mean, that could be usable on systems that don't have anything to do with Personal Space Weather Station or Tanger. But the primary use is going to be Personal Space Weather Station.
Yeah. So maybe one possibility is the, you know, there's a bunch of hardware. And so, you know, most of that, we're in some of the personal space. There's a bunch of documents that talk about the requirements for the Personal Space Weather Station. You know, maybe those are now more clear as to how those ought to. And there's some, you know, like the local communication that get a little more complicated because they talk about how you get data from the data engine to the local host. But some of what's in there is like precision. Maybe, well, there may be uses for that Personal Space Weather Station. That's a good question.
Yeah, because I could see the local communications protocol is more tied to the Tangerine, but the remote is more tied to the Personal Space Weather Station. So perhaps those, I mean, I can see using the LCC for lots of different things, but the remote communications protocol, that's probably not going to be used except for the Space Weather Station, right?
Yeah. So you were going to put together this table of part numbers, and maybe could that table say which?
Actually, that's one of the things that I sent you. It was a list of part numbers for hardware, and then it was a list of part numbers or document numbers and which side they're on. Basically, all I said is if it's a Tangerine document, it begins with T. If it's a PSWS document, it begins with PSWS. And then, you know, we can argue over what category some of the other ones could be. And in fact, maybe they aren't in either category.
Okay. So I need to go through that list. Is that something maybe you want to send everybody on the list to look through and get comments on?
Yeah, actually, I was intending to just have a quick once over and then post it before the meeting here, but I ran out of time and I didn't really give you enough time to comment on.
Okay, well, yeah, it'd be nice if everybody on the list could look it over and get an opinion, and we could churn it once and edited version.
Well, that was just a quick look for you to say, what are you, insane? Instead of having everyone say it.
Okay, that's fair enough.
I have a question. Would it make sense to go ahead and put a HAMSI link to the personal space weather station page or to the main HAMSI page on our Tangerine page?
I think it would be a good idea. What do you think, Nathaniel?
I think it'd be a great idea. I'm linking to the Tangerine SDR page from HAMSI.
Yeah, I saw that, and I didn't know, is there a would you rather link to the top page or to the personal weather station page?
I think you can link to the personal space weather station page.
Okay, well, I'll do that. And it's okay to use your logo as the link?
Yeah, that would be great. Thanks.
Yeah, so another thing, Nathaniel, Tapper's intent here is to make all this released open source. Is that your intent too?
Yes, that's my intent. The idea is if we're having the ham radio community develop this, it's made by volunteers, it should be open.
Okay, good. Just wanted to make sure that we were straight on that. And that's kind of was my thinking from the beginning. And I think in the Sunday seminar, you had said that too. So I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, and it's written into the document that got funded by the NSF too. So that's what I told everybody.
Okay, good. So we're committed to giving it away.
Sounds good.
Okay, that's it sounds like we have agreement. So I'll wait till you send the document out to the whole email list, Scott. I'll study it and pull all our comments together next week.
Okay, yeah, because just to tell everyone else, what I did is I took Tom's clock, ICD clock document, kind of as the default example, and I made up a list of consistent names for all of our documents and consistent file names for all the documents, including the revision number. So you can look at the file name and instantly tell what document it is. And I used the same cover page, and I put the logos on there and the headers and the footers. And so if everyone copies that same format, then all of our documents are going to have the same look, feel. And I'm trying not to get too OCD on this, but I really like the idea of having a consistent set of documents that are easy for people to understand what things are where.
I think they look very good.
Yeah, so the main thing is to to not put the HAMSci logo on the Tangerine documents and not put the Tangerine logo on the HAMSci document. I mean, mention them and talk about the use cases and all that, that's fine. But on the cover page, it's identified as, you know, one side or the other, so that we keep that kind of straight. And, you know, we had a little bit of a problem with HPSDR in the past, and anybody who wants an update on it, I'll be happy to talk to you on the telephone about it. But it was something we want to avoid this time and keep everything open and published, well-defined, so what domain it's in.
That sounds good to me.
Okay. Bringing up documentation, anyone had a chance to the RF mobile specs? Okay, I will interpret that as no.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tom. I keep meaning to look at that. I will get to it this week and send you some comments.
Okay, it's pretty easy. It's 10 pages, so it's not, it's a piece.
Well, but it's important, and I just haven't taken the time to do it. I need to bite the bullet and do that.
Yeah, no problem. I tried to capture all the high-level specs for the receiver. You know, it's just nice because that document performance of the
yeah. And here in Phoenix, when it's 112 degrees outside, you really don't want to go outside anyway. You've got plenty of time to sit inside. It's kind of like Minnesota in the winter.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you can pull up the Phoenix during the summer, pull up the document.
Yeah, and the fire being right outside your door.
Tom, that's the Tangerine SDR RF module specification version 0.1.
Yep, that's the document.
Okay, I'll try and look over that this week too. Okay. I went over the magnetometer document last week. That looked pretty good. So I'll try and read this one this week.
Okay. Well, it's not urgent because it'll go to revs. You certainly have pressing items on your...
Yeah. And Steve, are you still there? I think this is a sort of thing that I'd want people like you looking at too, because Steve, he's another radio scientist that's going to be potentially using this to do science work. So Steve, if you could take a look at that too, I'd appreciate it.
That'd be great. Yeah, I'm sort of the one who's the guy who keeps saying you guys need to build make a $200 Edis. It's my sort of my tagline. Because right now, yeah. I mean,
that's all we want to do, Steve.
Okay, that sounds great. Because I'm all for that. Because I have Edises, but you know they're fairly expensive. So yeah, so I can. Nathaniel, you should drop me a line to make sure, like, you get the other guys, like Phil and Ethan and Gareth and other people, to kind of actually look at this right now. There's kind of a lot going on right now. So.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I know you're moving in a short order of business right there. So.
Yeah, but if you do just get a chance to take a look at it, we'll try and get Phil and Gareth to look at it. And that's why we're having this rotating schedule of scientists show up so that we have more than one scientist looking at these documents and being like, okay, this should work for science purposes.
Okay, that'll be a good help. That's the last. All the other specs for hardware have been looked over by some knowledgeable folks, and so that's the last one. So when we get that one done, we have at least a baseline.
I guess one question I have, and forgive me if I'm asking some really ignorant stuff here, but like the one thing that I'm finding more and more and more. So the one thing, so I should just mention too, that I'm a physicist by training and an engineer by wannabe, I would say. I really like electrical engineering, but the one thing that I've is phase noise. So it seems like that is turning into a recurrent. So for example, earlier today, I went out to a local site we have here by Clemson, and I pulled out these Jackson Firefly and popped in a different GPS DO because it turned out that I'm listening to these CODAR things. This is stuff Ethan Miller's talked about. And, you know, something I noticed in the trace is it was kind of a fat trace. And in some of the data I've collected earlier over the summer. And so my hope is that this is going to magically get fixed by putting in a different GPS DO, but that sort of stuff I'm coming to realize is really actually really, really important to get that stuff right. And I don't know if there's a really in it do it. That's definitely something that I feel is I'm sort of becoming nearer and dearer to my heart as a scientist, is like some of these finer points to actually making really good measurements that you can actually use.
In the clock mod, there's peak to peak jitter, and a couple of other specifications. I think those are also copied partially RF module. And I did a presentation at the conference, very hard to talk while you're hearing the echo.
Okay, hold on. I'll go ahead, Tom. Now I'm muted.
Yeah, in the I did a quick look at the what I thought would be the phase noise requirements, and those are presentations that were given at HAMSI conference that was March. And so you might want to look briefly at the clock module spec, which is on the Green SDR site, or the RF module spec. You may be able to get it either way. You might have to look at both. I'm not sure. But we did do at least a first order estimate.
Yeah, and the idea is that the clock module is a module, so that if we screw it up somehow, then we'll be able to come back and say, oh, well, that's inadequate phase noise performance, so we have to come up with a better module. And so we can make, you know, either build a new one or fix the old one.
Okay, that sounds good. Sorry about muting. I'll figure this out next time. But no, I think that sounds good. I'm getting a little more of an appreciation for how sensitive these measurements really are in terms of getting that right. Because the signal processing I'm doing is match filtering. That's pretty standard radar signal processing techniques. So, getting that really well is important. And maybe it's one of those things too, where you guys built a one spec, but you also have sort of the plug-in that if you wanted to put in something really expensive, that will be awesome, that it will, everything will work very nicely. That's another possibility.
Exactly right, too. Right.
Yeah, in fact, the clock module spec is written with that option in the spec. What we did is I built a GNU radio model of phase noise, and so I modeled the phase noise was going starting at 1 over F and then going out to a flat noise floor, and then phase modulated recovered signal at the perturbations of the down-converted baseband signal noise, and that's where we came up with a preliminary estimate.
Yeah, and most of the people here are from the HPSDR, the past HPSDR, Open HPSDR project, where phase noise is one of our number one concerns. We are definitely, it's one of our top specifications that we have to meet.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. I'd be curious to see, just from my own, learning, to see something like that, to try to understand, like Tom, what you discussed, that sounds actually pretty neat. So it'd be cool to see that, or like try to understand what you did and how you simulated.
Okay, well, the first thing would be to go after the slides at conference, because it goes through the model and the math I used to do.
That's videos up on DC from the DCC videos, right?
Dave, I think Dave may have put those videos up somewhere. There's a video of the talk as well. If you don't want to spend the entire talk, the slides are there and can zero if you're interested.
Yeah, I actually was on the Tangerine SDR site earlier today, or today, trying to get the TeamSpeak stuff. And I noticed all these wonderful videos up there of different people chatting. So I'll have to watch that video and try to find them. I think Nathaniel, you actually posted the presentation somewhere too, didn't you?
Yeah, all the videos and presentations are also linked on the HAMSI website, on the HAMSI workshop meeting page. You just click on the agenda, and all the PDFs and abstracts and videos are right there.
That's great. Okay, I should look at that stuff a little bit more seriously.
Okay, Steve, we got 30 seconds here. I want you to try this to fix your echo problem. Go up to Tools and click on that, then scroll down to Options.
So I'm on a Mac, so when I see tools, I see identities, contacts, collected URLs, file transfer, invite buddies.
Options is at the bottom. In the tools menu, which you were just reading from, where it has identities, contacts, all that. At the very bottom of that long list is options.
The last entry on mine is stop recording. Start multitask recording, start recording. It might be under preferences. I mean, sometimes.
What version of TeamSpeak are you running?
Sorry for the echo.
It's 3.3.0. Okay, so it sounds like the menus are different.
But anyway, you need to look for the capture menu. Maybe under preferences.
Yeah, so I actually found the capture. Okay, so capture, push to talk. Okay, let me try that. I'm pushing to talk. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we do.
All right, maybe we fix this problem.
Wonderful.
All right. Thank you.
All right, I hear a lull in the conversation. Do we have time to talk about the issue of the question of the phase coherence check?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right, I'm collect data and I'm storing it. Let's not even include if it was HDF5 or what, but let's say I've got a file that contains a raw IQ data, say, and I can say I can plot that and see a nice sinusoidal waveform, which that represents the difference between the clock, my clock on my red pataya and the exact frequency of the, in other words, what the red pataya thinks the frequency is and what the frequency actually is by GPSDO. So, and if there's a gap in the data, I'm thinking what I need to do is I need to see if the gap is an interruption in the data where it starts where it left off, or if the data is actually missing from the gap. And you would check that by looking at how the phase of the signal before the gap matches with the phase of the signal after the gap. Am I understanding this right?
Yeah, that's that. Phil talked about that a little bit last week. I think that's exactly what he's looking for. Does the phase jump all of the sudden? So if there's, you know, if you drop samples, data package thinks that sample and later at this tight now, you'll get with an apparent phase jump of the missing. What might otherwise happen, you might fill in those samples with NAN, not a number, so that the time clock keeps ticking correctly. But you're just missing data in that gap period. So what he's looking for is missing samples, but that are correctly filled in and identified as missing. Or did the time record get corrupted as a result of the sample?
Okay, yeah. Just intuitively, by the way the data looks, I'm thinking that it's going to fill in. Well, it depends on settings. When you're recording using digital RF, you have the option to select the compression level. If you select compression level of zero, if there's missing data, digital RF recognizes that and it will fill in the missing area according with the right amount of samples, the correct number of samples with not a number. And so I will go through and verify that and make sure that that's really what's going on.
Yeah, depending on the level of coherency he's looking, a long-term coherency test might look for, you know, minutes and minutes of sample phase jump, maybe what is, but in that test you look for drift, where there may be a slow frequency oscillators, and so the test can just a little.
Wow, can somebody, I'm starting to think about the code I'm going to have to write to do this.
There is a test for that. If you look at the zero crossings of the sine wave and just plot the time of the zero crossings, can just condense.
But Tom, doesn't that assume that it's been filled in with NANs? The time, the number of samples is correct.
Well, if the samples is incorrect, the time of the zero crossing sudden computation of variance will take.
Right, but that's going to look way different than just standard variance. You're going to see two discrete points, right?
Well, yeah, Allen variance will automatically subtract out oscillator.
Oh, okay.
So if you need any help with that, just
here, send the questions to the list, because I think we'd all be interested in hearing how that comes out and what you're doing.
Okay, I did that in GNU Radio when I was looking at the Allen variance of the oscillator. And so I built the flow graph to identify the timestamp crossing a carrier. And then it computed that as a timestamp when it crossed zero, just collected 100,000 zero crossing timestamps in the Allen variance. There's a real quick and easy C that'll let you see what the variance is.
And did you post that to the list? I think that might have been right at the very beginning, and I'm not sure whether it came direct to John Ackerman and myself or whether you posted it to the list. Because we were trying to fool around and see what size attachments the list would.
Yeah, I don't remember. The program was, it's a small program. It was written by Tom Van Bok. There's open source code, so I use that. We had a lot of issues measuring Allen variance on some of the themes that we heard throughout the TimeNuts list was many SDOs, a lot of problem phase code.
Well, I'm expecting to see some of that in the red pataya, because when I look at this data, look at it real close, it's not as clean of a sine wave as you would like. There's a lot of high frequency noise in it, which is going to affect your zero crossings, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But you'll see a signal. The Allen variance will tell you a bit whether the jitter is real close and it's happening. So it's capable of doing some distinct. When I did the tests, I ran it, converted it about a 2 hertz low pass frequency.
Okay, so it is kosher to run it through a low pass filter then to do that. Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, you mentioned Allen variance. Is there like a a standard Fortran library that contains that, or do I just look for an algorithm online and code to it, or what?
There's a C library. It's actually just a C module. I'll find it in the C module.
Perfect. That'll help a lot. Thanks.
Okay. Very good. Anything else, Bill? Because we're running up against our hour here.
No, that's all I had that I really need to discuss.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks everyone for coming. Unless there's something else, we'll say 7-3 and good luck, Nathaniel, with your move, and hope everything goes smoothly and you don't lose anything.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And no promises that I'll be here next week. I know Gareth is supposed to be on next week, but yeah, we're actually moving next Monday. So not sure if I'll be able to make it on the telecon or not.
Well, congratulations on your new position. Have a safe.
I can try to be on next week, Nathaniel, too. It really just depends with my son. I mean, if he gets a nap, probably not. If he doesn't get a nap, there's a good chance I can be.
Yeah, that sounds great, Steve. I really appreciate you being here. And, you know, we do have that schedule made up just to make sure that there's at least one person here. But yeah, the more that, you know, the scientists can get on this telecon, I think the better. That's why I'm trying to check in as much as I can.
Yeah, definitely welcome, Steve.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, as I've sort of said, I mean, I want to learn more about sort of the electrical engineering and some of the nuances. And you guys know that stuff way, way, way to do. So it's a good chance for me to learn some new things.
Well, and if you have specific requirements, like problems you've had with other SDRs, like phase noise requirements, you know, we want to hear about them because we want to not make the same mistakes.
No, I appreciate that. And I mean, it'd be good. You know, there's an opportunity here, too. I mean, if there's something that a lot of people in the scientific community could potentially latch onto that's fairly inexpensive, it's a really good thing, actually, you know, because it would get more people involved. And also, it just forms an alternative for us scientists to go after that. And it's easier to propose that and get money for it when it's sort of inexpensive as opposed to buying really expensive stuff.
Yeah, and the idea is to make it inexpensive for what you want to do that's inexpensive. And then if you need more precision or lower phase noise or you know, wider bandwidth ADCs or something, and it's modular, so you can change out modules and upgrade. That's kind of the novel approach that we're trying to emphasize here. So anyway, I won't keep everyone. Thanks for coming, and it's great talking to everybody. The progress is phenomenal here.